Support for Midwest Swing is brought to you by baseball.
The Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Chris Jimenez, and you're listening to Midwest Swing on the Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board!
Woo!
Back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We're part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network, which you can find on Twitter at Zone Coverage MN. I'm your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon _ Warren. And it's a really fun show that I'm bringing you to you today. Excuse me. In addition to creating podcasts, I really enjoy listening to podcasts. I really enjoy things outside of sports. We're going to kind of mix some of my interests here today. Our guest is Jimmy Wissman. First of all, Jimmy, what's going on, man?
How are you, brother? Nice to have you.
Oh, it's so excited to be here with you. And if people don't know who you are, they can find you on Twitter at WHISMAN sucks. That's Wissman sucks, which is phenomenal Twitter handle, I got to say. But you are a co-host of two podcasts. First of all, Small Town Murder, which is the first one I listened to, and then Crime in Sports. And
correct.
So you're in Phoenix and you're doing these shows with a friend of yours, James Petragallo.
Correct.
How do you guys, I got to ask off the top, how do you guys manage to prepare for 5 hours of podcasting a week?
James does about 60 hours of research a week.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's all James's research. It's a man's dedication to scumbags and people completely screwing up their lives.
And now, the most recent episodes, I am super psyched about Jake the Snake Roberts because I'm a big wrestling fan. Hardbody Harrison was a great episode.
And that one was fun.
Yeah, I mean, so do you remember each episode? Like, if I bring back little things from each episode, keeping in mind that I'm kind of jumping puddle to puddle through these.
Yeah.
How much of those do you remember if I say, oh, you know, Hardbody Harrison had,
he's a terrible pimp.
so you're going to be able to recall most of it. I don't want to go too deep into the bag of tricks to try to make you remember things, but the baseball ones, especially to me, and wrestling are kind of my two things. But
it sounds to me like you grew up in the 80s as well then.
Yeah, basically. Well, and then I was super into Ray Carruth when he was a rookie, yeah. And then I found out he was just a horrible human being.
And he'll be out pretty soon.
Yeah, I guess his kid is going to, like, meet him at the gates, which...
Well, he's supposed to be there, but I have this strange feeling that a scumbag never changes, and I don't think he's going to talk to him and unless somebody tells him that it'll look good for the cameras. I don't foresee him talking to the kid that he tried to have killed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember if you guys said it or if I heard it somewhere else, but he was doing interviews, and then he realized the cameras weren't rolling, and then he got real cold. Everything he does is for appearances.
Yeah.
So
it's
it's a piece of crap.
Yeah.
And then Small Town Murder, the last one was Haiku Hawaii. I know that name kind of annoyed you, which is funny. I love the banter you guys have in addition to the nitty gritty of the show because again, if people want serious stuff, they can watch Investigation Discovery, they can watch old stuff on YouTube. I go crazy for, like, and again, I know you guys don't cover these Jeffrey Dahmers and the BTK because everybody's got that spin. Like, you're not going to find something new on Dahmer from a guy who was killed 25 years ago.
Right, exactly. And that's kind of the path that we take, that if it's been done to death, what's the point in talking about it again? I'm not going to find anything new, number one. I'm not going to crack anything. I'm not going to start some new investigation. And that's not our plan in the first place.
Yeah.
We're trying to have fun with it because it's something terrible. And everybody's heard horrible stories, but everybody thinks their life is awful. And we'll give you a story that will signify to you that your life is not that bad.
Now, did you guys go over 10,000 reviews on Amazon?
We did.
iTunes?
On iTunes, yeah, we did.
That's amazing. So you guys do have a bonus episode coming. That's that's really exciting. I got to ask. Go ahead.
The worst thing ever for James, because the guy's got he's got all this research to do for all the live shows that we have coming up. And then on top of that, we have to throw in another show that's a bonus episode.
So he's team no sleep right now.
Everybody's going to be screaming about. Say again?
He's team no sleep right now then. He's getting no sleep at all.
Yeah, and he's a father and a husband, so he's got to figure out how to make that work.
Well, and I think you guys said, doesn't he have a son? I don't want to get too personal, but a son with autism too. And
he does.
That's got to be tough because I have a friend who is a baseball writer who has a son with autism, and like that schedule is just topsy-turvy. You never have any idea one day to the next what that might entail.
Well, more than that, I mean, he's got specialists that James has got to take him to. He's got a different school day. I think they had him in I don't want to give too much because I don't know too much, but I remember that I'm in a special school and then they got him into a public school and then they wanted to move him to something else again. Either way, it's exhausting. Yeah. Little Joey is an amazing kid. He's fantastic. He just is. He's got so much energy. And James is out. He's got to try to balance playing with and entertaining Joey. And he has a daughter also who's in her teenage years. So she's a little more difficult these days to deal with, but James and her have an amazing relationship, and I'm envious because I hope that I have a daughter as well, and I hope that I have the same relationship that he has with hers because she likes the same things as he likes. And so he's got to balance the life of being a father and then investigating as much as he does. And the investigation that we do isn't like fingerprint analysis. It's just lots and lots of public records and legal jargon, and he's got to try to decipher how to turn that into layman's terms so that we can just talk about it rather than try to give the legal explanation, because that's not what most people don't have legal degrees.
Sure,
surprise. And they don't understand what a legal document says. They just read it for what it is, and we have to try to determine what that is and be able to make jokes out of it.
Which I love that, and we're going to get into that as far as like the unnatural, I guess, fusion of those two concepts. So you said you have a daughter. James has a daughter and a son. I have a daughter as well. She'll be 9 months in a couple weeks here. But so that means no sons, no Jimmy Jr. Wisman Jr. Is that?
I got a little boy also.
Oh, okay. But is that Jimmy Jr. Wisman Jr. like Otis Nixon?
Jesus, no. I'm no dummy.
Hang on though. I've heard you say you're a dummy a couple times. I just want to make sure you weren't going down that path.
I'm not a dummy in terms of self-saboteur that I already knew. Like, before we started these podcasts, I had made the observation that juniors are a goddamn problem.
Right.
And I would, plus, I hate me, and I would never give my name to another human being. I would just be 100% torture in that I'm so dumb. It's ridiculous how dumb I really am. It's a willful ignorance because I refuse to read anything or try to get smarter. I enjoy learning things. I'm just terrible at, I say I'm going to read things. I got all these books from people. When I say I want something or I want to read something, people send stuff to us and I just don't have time to read them because I have a job. I'm a husband and a father. I have things that I do outside of podcasting. And then we have to try to keep up with social media and trying to, book live shows and create avenues of further opportunity. So I'm just as busy as James, minus the actual preparation for shows.
Yeah, speaking of time, thank you so much for taking that out for me today.
Shit, damn it.
I assume you've carved out some time while kids are at school or away so that you don't have to be too neglectful. But so thankful for that. You mentioned live shows. I listened to one of your most recent podcasts. Sound like you guys are going to be doing kind of a West Coast swing.
Yeah. Well, we were going to do it. It had a lot of other locations booked as well, but because of the dates and where we were going to be at in accordance to that place, mm-hmm. it just didn't work in terms of geographical ease, I guess. It's just that if you do a show on a Saturday in Portland, it's hard to do a show on Sunday in Atlanta. You know what I mean? So we ended up trying to book it down the West Coast this time. And then we have a weekend that we're going to do Chicago, Philly, and New York. And I believe it goes Philly, Chicago, then New York. Either way, we're trying to make it to where it's the ease of getting to the locations is there for us. And so we have this tour booked now, and then in a few more months, we'll get more bookings down the East Coast and on that side of the country, just to try to make it as even as possible. Because we have people, geez, they're all over the world.
Didn't you guys go 15 million downloads recently or something like that? I mean, just absurd numbers.
Small Town Murder went over 15 million. That's our first year now podcasting that one. And Crime and Sports has, I don't even know how many now. I lost track after 10. But it's
amazing.
And that one has been going for 2 years. So the numbers are they're great. But it's that we want to keep that going and keep it growing, not just going. But also we want to be able to get to where the people are, because we're not huge names. We're two dicks that open at comedy clubs for big name comedians in Phoenix. That's all we do. We don't really have a name. Nobody knows who we are. So we'd like to get to where these people are, to thank them for taking the chance on us and giving us a chance to entertain them, number one, but then coming back the next week and the next week and the next week. And we're incredibly grateful and so thankful for having the opportunity that we have now. And we just want to make sure that keeps going, keeps growing, and we're able to give back to the people that actually did this for us.
So what's like the craziest location you know someone's listened from? Because I got one download from like Sri Lanka one time, and I was like, what the heck, you know, or Bora Bora. Like,
well, we get those every week where it's like a country that, I mean, I can't pick Finland off a map anyway, and that's a popular country. But names of these countries I don't even know exist, or they're everywhere. And when I see those, I have to assume that it's a service member or somebody from the military that's based there. And because we'll get groups from like Saudi Arabia, like 300-400 in a week. And I'm just like, that's not Saudi Arabians giving a shit about Mel Hall. That's for sure service members that somebody tells another buddy that tells another buddy. And on Night Watch, I imagine they're bored and they want to listen to something. So that's what I think it is. And to be honest, that's what I hope it is, because I'd love nothing more than to find out that our armed members of our services around the world are listening to my dumb voice tell them a ridiculous story and they're just laughing at dick jokes. That would be fantastic. Amazing.
Well, and I appreciate you guys helping carve out my trip to and from Minot, North Dakota. Not far. We passed near Cooperstown and the Headless Norseman that you guys covered in Crime and Sports, Small Town Murder. I almost wanted to go to the city, do one of those pictures where you stand in front of the city sign with like your hands out and be like, I finally made it to Cooperstown, Ma.
Yeah.
Because I'm a baseball writer, so obviously Cooperstown is a big deal for me. And then, you know, have a bunch of people start dogging me about it being the wrong one. But to and from Minot for a funeral and like 7 hours each direction. I think I listened to like 6 episodes. Listened to Steve Howe with my wife. She was not feeling it, but, you know, I covered the twins. He was a twin for a little while, you know, around the time I was born. So I don't remember. I don't know much about it. But
sure.
What a disaster that guy was. Holy crap.
It's just there's nobody that hates Steve Howe like Steve Howe. That man just really did not enjoy himself, and it was oh so evident in how much self-sabotage he does and did. And it's just a shame, because there's so many people in lower class ball leagues trying so hard to get a chance, not just a chance, but not even just live a dream, but a chance to live the dream and a chance to prove what they have. And thousands of them every year don't get the chance. And this man, to the point of rolling a vehicle and killing himself while under the influence of methamphetamines, it's crazy. It's bananas to really what the ends that these guys go to.
Well, that was almost a microcosm of his life, was it not?
Yeah. It's such a great just metaphor.
Yeah, and this is a guy, first-round pick, left-handed, 95-mile-per-hour fastball. I mean, guys like that get chances forever, and I understand that.
Right.
But, man alive, and it seemed like he wasn't such a bad guy. Like, he didn't treat people horribly. It's just he had no whether it was self-control or addiction, impulse right. control, whatever it was, man right. alive.
There are bad seeds all over the place between what's his name? Damn it, it's escaping me. The kid touching baseball player who's in prison, and he had tons and tons of noodles in his pantry when he was arrested, and that's all he had. He had very few dollars, but tons of ramen noodles. Chris? No, was it Chris? I forget his name. Damn it, it's gonna make me upset. Yeah. He played for the. Either way, it's guys like that. That's a bad seed. You're touching kids. Or Mel Hall, who's grooming a young girl and her entire family at 14, 15 years old. That's who he's going after. That's a demon. That's a disgusting dreg of society. Whereas Steve just could not shake drugs, and to a point that he just destroyed everything he had. Being given a $7 million contract, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then being cut because he comes up negative or positive rather. And it's a damn shame. It just proves how much he just has little disregard for himself. Granted, he cares about everyone around him. It's just he hates himself and has such little disregard for himself or such little regard for himself. He just couldn't shake it and ended up in a terrible, terrible way. The story ends horribly.
Chad Curtis, I think, is who you were thinking of.
That's it, Chad Curtis.
Yankees outfielder from when I was like really starting to get into baseball. So, yeah, people got to donate to you, crimeandsports@gmail.com. You guys got a Patreon page.
Yeah.
That's got to be the lifeblood for what you guys are doing podcast-wise.
Really is.
But I have to believe that that's been a big part of the evolution of the show. It sounds amazingly produced. You guys must be in some kind of studio.
Yeah, we started in James's living room, in his kitchen rather, recording there. And when we started to gain some steam and actually get a foothold in podcasting on the charts and such, I know some guys at the local radio station it's the biggest radio station in Phoenix or in Arizona, biggest morning show, and they. They are owned, a chunk of them owns a chunk of Podcast One, and they spoke to us about possibly getting on the network, and if we got on the network, they were going to allow us to record there. So we chose that avenue of having the better equipment and the better place, and then the network of promotion is the word, I guess, but there was very little at the beginning because we weren't really on the network. Then once we got on the network, now the promotion is outstanding, and the ability of what they can do for us is outstanding. Getting ads was huge, and then having the actual studio, that's been just it's life saving because we didn't have to buy equipment. Granted, we did eventually. We now have equipment mm-hmm. in case we have to go on the road or have to record remotely. But having that studio is by far and away the biggest help that we've gotten in terms of a leg up. And we're very grateful. I mean, not just for the audience, but the opportunities that we've been given and afforded are insane. And we know that what we're doing doesn't happen for everybody. And because of that, we're very grateful. It's very much like comedy in that when you get something that you know doesn't happen, that's the benefit James and I have had is that we are comics and we've seen how hard that business is versus when we went into podcasting. This business is, it's all stacked against you. In every term, if you're not Adam Carolla, if you're not Joe Rogan, if you're not a name, even Anna Faris, if you're not a name, nobody cares about what you have to say. Mm-hmm. And that's why I don't understand why people that have podcasts that are just like comics and they're going to talk to other comics that are local comics talking about why they became an open micer. Like, nobody cares about that. Why would you have to find something that people care about and to discuss something that is different? And if people aren't doing that, nobody's going to listen because nobody's going to know who you are enough to be interested. And if it's an interesting podcast and an interesting conversation, people will find it. And I'm thoroughly convinced that people in their cubicles, people on long truck trips, people that are traveling a lot, these are the people that really are driving podcasts. And if you give them content that's engaging and something that they can listen to that'll hold their attention, man, sky's the limit because people will listen and people will hang on. And the longer it is, the more they love it, because Joe Rogan is doing 5 hours of podcasting a day. Wow. And people love it and they listen the whole damn thing. When we have long episodes, it's our biggest listens. We put out a 3-hour Crime and Sports this week. It's already one of the better, bigger listen to shows that we have. And it just came out 2 days ago. It's long podcasts that people like, and it's something that they relate to or they remember. But it's not something that they've heard the whole story. You know what I mean? That's what we're trying to aim for. And like Jake the Snake, like nobody knows how horrible his life ended up. I mean, granted, it's not that horrible now, but it, boy, oh boy, did get horrible for a long time. Going to jail for not paying child support is that's not a happy day.
Right. Yeah. And it's got to be nice, too, to like have a, you know, pour your heart and soul into something, because then at least you believe in it and can fight for it. So yeah, if people are listening here, help them with their funky algorithm on iTunes. Give them 5 stars. I love that phrasing. I love all the kind of nuanced things. The yay at the beginning, the you sir may
Thank
F
you.
Off. I'm going to hit you with one of those at the end to wish you well. But 5 stars for those guys, both their podcasts. Be sure to give us 5 stars for Midwest Swing. Donate to those guys. So all the states are done with this Haiku Hawaii. What's next? I mean, are you guys going to start kind of hopping all over? Are you guys going to start taking recommendations? I sent a DM to the Crime and Sports, or not Crime and Sports, the Mid, I'm confusing all these podcasts. Small Town Murder. My brother-in-law lives in a Montana town where this teacher was out for a run, and these two oil workers, you know, oil is kind of big in North Dakota, Western North Dakota. They took her.
Roughnecks?
Yeah, they took her, basically snuffed her out, and then buried her in a shallow grave. And
wow!
Like, oh man, I would love to hear these guys talk about this for like 3 hours. But I mean, if you open it up to people giving suggestions, I suppose it could go sideways. But what's next for you guys?
The suggestion avenue I really enjoy, because I like involving listeners in everything we do. So having everyone give us suggestions, I don't ever want them to stop. I love seeing the stories. I love telling people why we can't do them, at the same time as taking that story and forwarding it on to James. The stories that we can't do, we try to take them 25,000 population or smaller. Mm-hmm. That qualifies for a small town murder, in our opinion. And then something that's fascinating, like that, like two oil workers. How do you convince your buddy? Like, that story is fantastic. Not that somebody got hurt or that somebody is no longer here.
That's compelling.
Just that is it's compelling. It's fascinating. It's dark, disturbing, and disgusting. And I like stories like that, just because I like to I like to out people that are horrific, terrible people, and find out why would you do that? What we'd like to do is bounce around still around the U.S., but we're also going to go international. We'll go to Brazil. We'll go to Italy. We'll find horrible murders in tiny towns in other countries as well. But it's not stopping. That one's small town murder is going to go for a very long time. We just enjoyed our first 56 podcasts, bouncing around, finding them all over the country as well as all around the world. I think we did 2 in Canada, and then where was that other one? I think there was one over in
London, wasn't there, something?
I think it was. Yes, we did do and one.
We just listened on the way home yesterday to the one in Strat something or other in Canada.
Yeah, that was Canada.
The slasher.
We did 2 in Canada, because one of the first ones in Canada was the guy that possibly maybe kind of killed his kids when he took them for a walk or took them to the park or whatever. That one I really love, because doing it live is a lot of fun, because you can see the turn in the audience when they get really connected, when it gets super silent in there and they're absorbing all the information. And then it gets really somber because something awful happens. And then that's the fun time for us, because it's the challenge of trying to find where's the line and where can we make jokes. And then we get the instant gratification of finding when the joke actually did work, and saying something dark and hearing a crowd moan. Or in Chicago, I said something and somebody shouted, "Oh, Jimmy," something like that. That's the stuff that I love, because you get to find out where your audience line really is. And so the live shows are huge for us. in terms of meeting people and connecting with our audience, but it's also for the audience, it's fun to actually see us do the show and see what it's like. And we react exactly in those chairs on a stage as we do in the studio. There's a lot of movement. There's a lot of body language being done in the studio that you can't see or feel until you're at a live show. So I'm hoping that a lot of people show up to these, because so far they've been unbelievably sold. People have been showing up, and this is with zero promotion. That's just with us doing it on the podcast. So I'm hoping that the tour that we're going to do churns out a bunch of people that are really into us and want to see what we do.
Well, like you've said, the Jimmy laugh is legit. It's not fake.
it's
raspy. It can be hoarse at times. If it's a Dick Moss joke, it can go on for a little while. That just killed me. My wife didn't really understand why I was laughing at Dick Moss, and then the probably the most heinous Small Town Murder was the 3-year-old boy that was fed to the dog, and you guys just kept going, all right. And every single time I just bursted out laughing, because I can totally relate. I grew up in a small town where it's like Hicks.
Man of many words.
All right. And so right. Those little things just kill me. Do you kind of have to push against that line of what you guys push against and push back, that line of what you think people will or won't be okay with? Again, like being a habitual line stepper, to steal a line from Chappelle's show. You guys, and not because you're trying to get that reaction, but it's because in general, that's how this is going to work, right?
Yeah, well, I think that neither James nor I give a damn about a politically correct line. The only line we care about is a decency line, in terms of we say it all the time that we're assholes, not scumbags. And that can't be more true, because James and I will for sure say something horrible that probably shouldn't be laughed about. But nobody's going to tell us what not to say. And we're not going to go so far as to talk about a child being raped and make fun of a child, or make fun of a woman that's being raped and murdered. That's not our bag. That's not for us. If there's something that's funnier than it is offensive, I'm in. That's my formula. I think it's just that if it's going to be offensive, the level of offensive has to be lower than how hilarious it is. If that's okay, and if that formula is in line, then I'll say it. And you have to make that judgment on the fly too. So James and I also are both very good at if we do say a joke that we don't necessarily like, we won't cut it out, but we will comment how terrible we feel what we just said. I think it's just self-policing is really the avenue that we take. It's just that I'll check him, he checks me, and as long as we both agree, we move forward.
So let's talk about Little Jimmy for a second. So did you... I mean, obviously, James talks about the East. Where did you grow up?
Colorado.
Okay, so not too far from Arizona. I mean, how did you land in Phoenix? I mean, it couldn't have just been In-N-Out.
No, my mom married an idiot and moved us here.
I've been there.
And I was too young to say no. So we moved here, and then I'd go back and forth to visit family in Colorado. And so I went from here back and forth, Colorado. And James kind of had the similar life, but he moved here younger or a little older. And he would go back and forth to New York to visit his family. And he would stay out there for periods of time. So that's kind of why we bond, because we're both interested in comedy. We both are interested in crime. We both had broken childhoods, and we both were traveling between interstate travel to visit family that we don't get to see every day. So because we led similar paths and similar lives, granted mine turned a little darker than his, we both kind of ended up in the same place. And it's we found that fascinating. And then more that we just genuinely get along. We genuinely respect each other. And we genuinely love each other. And I think that just parallel, everything being parallel, it just winds up making us have great banter and discussing topics, we can listen to each other and give each other ample time to come up with a joke. And I think that's really where it is. It's just balancing respect and not trying to shine on the other. I think that I hate that about podcasts with two people, just one trying to overtake the conversation and then the other battling to get their spot. It's just, if you've got good banter and you've got a good rapport, that won't happen. You just let each other talk.
So, I mean, you guys are clearly friends, and obviously you're drinking beers away from the shows and stuff like that. I mean, it's a really good bond. I can relate to some of that. I mean, my mom married an idiot because she was pregnant with an idiot, and now you're talking to that idiot. So I was the shotgun shell for that wedding. And
I love it.
So, yeah, she's been married three times, second dad died, all that crazy stuff. So lots of goofy stuff. So how old were you guys when you guys became friends?
James and I, in our 30s.
Recently, like not.
Yeah.
Not like.
Yeah, we've only known each other.
Because you get the sense from you guys that you guys have been friends for like 20, 30 years. Like it really does come across that way.
Yeah, that's because we have the same life. It's just, it's fascinating how exact it is, even though it's so different. He's tall. I'm short. He has great hair. I'm bald. He's Italian. I'm German. Everything is so different, yet our lives are so similar. And because of that, it feels like, personally, I feel like I've known him all my life, and I can't speak for him, but I imagine it's very similar. And because of that, we get along really well.
How the heck does he know, or did he know, Rod Beck? Because that...
So, James...
that was crazy. I'm like, Rod Beck? I mean, he was the closer for... I think the Cubs for a while, or the Giants when I was a kid. I mean, I definitely know who Rod Beck was.
James has got a ton of game-worn stuff that Rod gave to him, because he used to... I forget how he met him, but they're friends. They were genuine. Like, they hung out all the time.
He almost reminds me of, like, the Bam Bam Bigelow of baseball.
Yeah. He's a bad boy, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But the story that James has is so tragic, and it's actually... as beautiful as it is tragic, because James loved baseball, and having a friend that actually is doing that and was, I mean, for lack of a better word, he was a star in baseball.
And
it's just a bummer for him to be gone, but the story is pretty outstanding, and I hope James tells it one day on the show, just because they were really great friends.
Well, you know, I suppose it'd be hard to do an episode about him being that close to the situation, and I don't know if he really did genuinely bad things. I know he you know, he had some drug issues and stuff, but the stories about him were just phenomenal. You know, the buying mobile home to live outside the park in was it Des Moines?
Right. I don't know what city it was.
I think it might have been because Iowa Cubs on his way back.
Yeah, I've heard that story as well, and I think James told it to me too. It's a pretty interesting story. The man. Led a super fascinating life, not just in that. I mean, if James could tell some of the stories, I don't know if he would or not, but it's so fascinating. So James went to L.A. with him and wandered into, like, Mazzio's, or Maestro's, rather. Maestro, whatever it is. It's some steakhouse there, and they, like, walked through the back and stuff, and I think that was because of Rod, it may have been because of somebody else. Either way, I believe he met that person because of Rod. But Rod gave him a lot of cool avenues, and he taught James a lot about life just through the life he led through baseball. And I'm terrible at telling stories because James led them and lived them, and I hope James tells them more on the show.
Yeah, for sure. Well, not to move from that quickly, but what do you guys do outside of podcasting and comedy? Because – you know, you said you had a job outside of that. Are you talking about comedy, or do you have something in addition to that?
No, so I work in the electric industry in Arizona, and then I do comedy outside of that, and I work 60 hours a week at my job, and then I do, if they book me on the weekend at the club, then there's another 10 or 15 hours there. And then we've got a podcast, and podcasting takes 5 to 6 hours on a Saturday. And then during the week, I'm engaged with the audience through social media, and I just try my best to constantly stay busy. I sleep maybe 4 hours a night, and I'm just constantly busy. I work really, really hard at everything I do, and podcasting I'm more passionate about than anything else that I do.
How's that moat coming along that James is telling you to put up?
Oh, that's never going to happen. James can yell at me all he wants. It's impossible for me to do. I feel like because I'm impassioned and I believe in this project so much that I feel like if James is doing 60 hours a week researching, I've got to be doing that equal part too. So I do that through social media and I let people get a hold of me at any time. I'm not afraid to talk to people and just be me.
Yeah, you got to do the outreach and evangelism, right?
Yeah, I'm gonna end up hiring somebody to do that shit for me.
Well, once you just got to keep pushing. Maybe 20,000 iTunes reviews, yeah. Then you can get an intern. An intern, you can pay them nothing but give them exposure.
Yeah.
So what's it like being a stand-up? Because you know people think they're funny, but there's a lot of pressure when those lights are on you.
Yeah, well, it's not. There's nothing glamorous about it at all. We hate it. We hate ourselves, and that's why podcasting is so interesting to us because. We actually enjoy that, and James and I are starting to like ourselves, which is weird because
sounds like therapy.
Comedy, yeah, and with comedy, you loathe yourself, and especially if jokes don't work or the audience just doesn't seem to be on board, you just it's a vicious cycle, and it makes you hate yourself more. And that's why we're up there in the first place, is telling jokes because it makes us feel better about ourselves.
So. When you're a stand-up, no matter your experience level, I mean, what kind of influences do you have? I mean, I know you don't want to, you obviously never want to have jokes that are lifted because that looks terrible, yeah. And it is terrible, but do you look to guys or gals for style or delivery?
Right.
But how do you vet that?
I tend to, I listen to a lot of Doug Stanhope, a lot of Jim Jefferies. I really love, Joe Rogan. So I tend to gravitate towards comics that do something entirely different than what I do. And that kind of lends to the I'll never steal one of their jokes, right. Accidentally or even on purpose, because I can't do what they do. Theirs is more stream of consciousness, stream of thought. It's they take a topic and it feels like they're just telling their take on stage. And Bill Burr does very similar style of comedy that it's so original and so different from what I do, and I can't duplicate it. Those are the comics that I gravitate towards and I really look up to. And I think a lot of comics actually do that. There's very few comics that do a certain style and then gravitate towards and love the comics that do the same thing they do. There are comics that do one-liners, and there's only a few that do that nationally. So it's hard to not look up to or do something similar that they do, because you're just doing one-liners. It's impossible to not love what they do. You're doing the same thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't do what Doug Stanhope does, and he's an amazing person. And that's the greatest part about doing comedy too, and being in a big city like this. James and I get to open for these guys and actually meet them and talk to them and have conversations with them on the same level and have them treat you as an equal. And then you hear amazing stories, you see how they behave, you see how they carry themselves, and you get to see behind the curtain. You get to see the wizard. You know, it's weird at the same time as it's really enlightening and awesome. And that's how I figure out who I really love. But Doug Stanhope's like, he's a hero to me, just because of how he is and how he does. Nothing that he does is a lie. He lives a life the way he lives, and he doesn't hide any of it. He's not afraid of you seeing exactly who he is. And that's kind of been my model of how I expose myself on the show and on the show's. I don't hide from what I am. I'm a very depressive, manic depressive, clinically depressed person who has attempted suicide and has been sexually abused. And I'm not gonna lie. I'm not gonna hide from it. And it's easier to say all of it than it is to hold it all in and try to wear a mask and not let anybody see any of that. I don't need to tell the whole story all the time, but I have no shame in anything I've done in my life. I'm not a criminal. I've never hurt anybody that I know of.
Right.
Everything I've done has been to me or in at my own cost. So Doug Stanhope is very similar to the same way. He just hurts. He hurts himself. he's an alcoholic and he doesn't hide it. And it's beautiful. The man's he's, I believe, one of a modern day genius. And I'd love to one day be thought of in the same regard. I don't care if I ever am, but I'd love it if it were to happen.
Well, I can relate to the clinically depressed. I just took my my pills before we started the show, and I'm looking at them right now. So yeah, it's a struggle, and I want people to understand too that they're not alone. They're never alone. No shame in getting help, no matter if it's pills, if it's self care, if it's talking to somebody. Just that help for sure. You know, I wanted to ask who you've opened for. I didn't mean to be, kind of loose-handed about going from something so serious to something less serious. But what comedians have you opened for that people might be able to?
If you have a favorite comic, I've either met them or been on the same stage as them. That's really the gist. From Anthony Jeselnik, David Spade to Stanhope, Jeff Ross. Hundreds of big name people that I have genuine friends that are comics that will call me and take me on the road with them from time to time, like Eliza Schlesinger, Jesse May Peluso. There's hundreds of them, and the problem is that none of that. It's not really the problem. It's the beauty of it is that none of it even matters, because that comes with just being a regular at a club. You know what I mean? When you perform enough. And a club owner starts booking you somewhere, you just get bookings. If Dave Attell doesn't have somebody opening for him that weekend, if he doesn't bring somebody and they book a local, the club books the local guy, and there I go. There I'm a gig, and now I've opened for Dave Attell. You know, there's no prestige in it at all. All it is for my own feathers in my cap. It feels good, but the club just books it. So there are a few that want me, request me, but the club books me for most of them. So it doesn't matter is the thing. And that's the beauty of comedy, is that when you do open for somebody and they book their next gig and they ask for you, that's when you know you've done a good job, or possibly a terrible job, because they want you to be awful in front of them because it makes them look better.
So, I mean, has anybody in public recognized you even just once? Like, hey, you're Jimmy Wissman.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I actually got out of my truck at a gas station and saw a lady wearing red framed glasses going up to a gas station door. And walking up to the door, I like to compliment people wearing glasses because I wear glasses myself, and I'm always self-conscious of it. So if somebody tells me that they like my glasses, it makes me feel a little better. So I tell her that I like her red glasses. And as I grabbed the door to open it for her, she said, "I like your podcast, Jimmy." And it was, it was bananas. It meant to me that she liked my podcast enough to go look for what I looked like. And then not only that, not just look at what I look like, but memorize my face enough to recognize me in public. And that was just a few months ago, but that was kind of the moment that it was like, this is getting real now. This is something that can definitely be something that if somebody will tell me in public that they like my podcast, then I can't imagine what people would say in private about my podcast. It was really great. It was rewarding at that moment. And I was blown away. I didn't know what to say to her.
So you can be honest here. Did you take it personally when I said you reminded me of Judah Friedlander and James reminded me of the douche from Parks and Rec? The voices. When I first listened, like the first episode, I'm like, this sounds like Frank from 30 Rock and the douche from Parks and Rec.
People tell me frequently that I sound like Archer, but the first time that somebody said it, they just said the guy on Crime and Sports sounds like Archer. I don't even know who the guy is. I just know that it's a cartoon character and he looks very masculine in the drawing that I saw. So I assumed they were talking about James. So a few weeks later, I had gotten a few more comments about Archer, and somebody had said that it was me, and I was like, they're mixing up us, obviously. There's no way that I sound like him. So then I Googled the guy and listened to a cartoon clip, and they were absolutely talking about me, and I can't believe that my voice sounds so similar to a guy that's a cartoon character that's actually a badass. This voice is the voice of a badass somewhere, which is mind-boggling and depressing.
You know, that's funny. I've only seen it when the TV's on FX when we've been watching The Simpsons the night before. But I've always heard that voice and thought that was Judah Friedlander, and by definition thought that was you as well. But I guess it's not. It's H. John Benjamin, I think.
I have no idea.
Yeah, he's Sterling
Archer. I guess it's the voice of Bob's Burgers also, something there.
Yeah, my mom loves that show. I don't know anything. I've stopped watching that Fox comedy block because Family Guy just fell off a cliff. But
everything did.
Yeah.
The Simpsons are the only cartoon that's any good, and I haven't seen maybe 30 episodes of it in my entire life. But every one of them were amazing. I just don't have a lot of time for TV.
Don't watch TV. It's so funny. I was watching an episode, and like Ned Flanders was married to Miss Krabappel, and I'm like, you stop watching The Simpsons for 15 years, and Ned Flanders marries the freaking teacher. What the? So okay, I haven't watched since I was a kid, so I deserve that. But it just cracked me up. Yeah, it's funny how TV's changed. I used to watch that the block with Parks and Rec and The Office and Community. I'm a huge Donald Glover fan. Music especially, I think he did fine as Troy, and his comedy I think is good. But I'm a huge Childish Gambino fan. But
amazing, that guy is the most. Probably the most talented man in show business. He's not just I think he's a director too and a writer. And
he wrote
comic.
Atlanta, didn't he? The FX.
Yeah.
Show?
Yes.
Unbelievable.
He's fantastic. I can't imagine being that talented. Just to give you an idea, maybe you'll enjoy it. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but I opened for Joel McHale for New Year's.
Oh, I saw him in Minneapolis at the. Pantages or something up downtown. Okay. I work downtown Minneapolis, and so I saw him there. He was hilarious.
Just to give you an idea, in comedy, it's rare to really, when you open for somebody, for them to really, really show you, it's very rare that they're actually, like, above and beyond amazing people. Mm-hmm. And that's one that he cares about people. He cares about himself. He cares about his family, and he cares about his body and his health. I've never seen a man be so kind to everybody and eat kale salads and chicken. Like he's very health conscious at the same time as an amazing person. He's like, you'd think like an LA guy that looks like him, he'd be into like gluten free and just a pretentious dick. And he's none of that. He's the possibly the sweetest person I've ever met in my life.
Well,
he's
if you're
fantastic.
Gonna make Seacrest jokes all day long, you really got to take care of yourself, because man, Seacrest is loaded.
He is the exact opposite of Ryan Seacrest. They couldn't be more polar opposite at the same time as being handsome.
Oh man, I've loved McHale since the Soup days, which I think everybody knows. Yeah, he was in The Informant. The Informant, which I thought was a great flick. And then, I saw him do
stand-up. He was in Ted, and the best part of that movie was him being that shit boss.
And at the beginning, too, like, of Community, I'm like, oh, I don't know if he's going to be able to do this acting thing.
Right.
And then he really picked up steam, and it was really good.
And he told me unbelievable behind-the-scenes stories about somebody on that show that's a horrible person. And it will come out, so I'm not going to say the name, but the old man is a terrible person.
That's what I was thinking too. Yeah, I've never heard a good
thing
about him.
He's a vile human being.
I've never heard.
And I can't wait for the stories to come out.
Well, good. That's we're kind of in that environment, so that'll be coming
good.
Here before
too long. Yeah, yeah.
So,
the Me Too thing is what started it.
Good.
It's good. He says horribly racist things about people that for sure don't deserve it. I mean, nobody deserves it, but he just throws out wild name calling. You'll see.
Yeah,
that's just. Foreshadowing and precursor. Anybody listening to this podcast, when you find out that one of your childhood heroes is a complete piece of shit, go back to this and listen again, it'll be that guy.
So, Crime and Sports. You guys talk about sports. You say you don't need to really be into sports to enjoy the show, and I think I'm totally on board with that. But you know, James is pretty overt about being a Yankees fan, a Giants fan.
Yeah.
Where does your fandom lie, or what sports do you enjoy? Well, let's wrap wrestling into this. Whatever you enjoy that is even semi-athletic. Yeah. What do you enjoy that?
I loved anything Denver, all sports Denver. I tried my best to get into Arizona sports, being here as long as I have, mm-hmm. and it just isn't enough for me. It leaves something to be desired when this town is full of transplants. So there's no real hometown allegiance to anybody here. And when the Suns went to the playoffs and almost won in the finals against the Bulls in 93, I think, 92,
yeah, like
90,
Kevin Johnson and Charles Barkley and
Dan Marley and yeah. Mark West, that team made almost got this city to give a damn about sports. And then the Cardinals team that went to the Super Bowl almost got this team to give a shit about sports and or this city. And then the Diamondbacks won the World Series almost. That's my point, is that these teams have all gone to the championship or won the championship in their respective sports. And this town still, when those teams stink, those stadiums are empty for that team's fans. When the Cardinals stink and the Cowboys roll through town, you couldn't see more blue and silver in the stadiums as if it was in friggin' Dallas. It's disgusting how no allegiance to these teams people have. Whereas in Denver, the Nuggets have never won. They're always awful. Mm-hmm. And people still, it's sold out all the time. People still go. The Denver Broncos, Von Miller goes to the games. Goes to Nuggets games. These guys actually care about their city, and they care about the sports there. And the Broncos really are what drives the sports in Denver. But
they're horrible this year. Oh
yes. Oh geez, five games. Win five.
Go
five
get a quarterback.
When you win the Super Bowl, you just got to be happy, and because for the next 5 to 8 years, your team's gonna blow donkey.
The
dick.
Vikings this
and
year, they were so close, man. Such a painful thing.
For the next 5 years, they're gonna be awful. They're gonna be awful.
Ugh.
That's just the way sports go. The salary cap ruined sports, we just have to deal with it. That's what it is.
How's this for a deep pull? I sit in front of Larry Fitzgerald's dad at Twins games.
Oh, amazing.
He's dumb as
that
hell.
That guy is
literally the worst sports media member in the Twin Cities.
Really?
Awful.
Is that right?
Yep. He and his son are nothing like each other. His son is wonderful. He's generous with his time. He's a nice guy. His dad's just a jerk. He's not a nice guy.
NFL Man of the Year, for Pete's sake.
Right.
And Kurt Warner, very similar guy. And I opening for Joel, Kurt came by the club and hung in the green room with us for a while. That man couldn't be more humble. And I hate the word humble. He couldn't be more amazing as a person. Like, humble makes somebody sound like just to themselves and just, you know, whatever. I don't
care. He's real.
Yeah, he's a real human being with genuine emotions and feelings. And he's a great person. He's fantastic. And him and Larry Fitzgerald were best of friends when they were playing.
Amazing.
And if Larry's anything like Kurt, you usually don't get a great person like Kurt with a best friend that's a complete dick. So I assume Larry just has to be incredibly awesome also. And I love watching that. I love seeing guys that are that great stay great and be just great people. They're as good of a person as they are an athlete. That's what sports are supposed to be.
Yeah.
But there's also vile human beings that keep our podcast going, so I hope those people exist also.
So, quick aside, how are we doing on time? I got a few more things to get to, but
fine.
Okay.
Fine.
So, how did each of these podcasts come to be? I mean, Crime and Sports, yeah, I kind of get that. That's Crime and Sports are like peanut butter and jelly, but when I tell people, and believe me, I feel like I'm a freaking ambassador, and I'm not trying to pat my own back because I'm not like Barry Horowitz from WCW patting his back as he's walking out to the ring. But when I tell people to listen to the show and then I give them the disclaimer, just like you have to, it's like they swear, there's crime, there's murder, and there's comedy. They're like, you get that look like, the hell? I'm like, it doesn't make sense. It's like peanut butter and pickle sandwiches. I don't know if you've ever eaten one of those, but oh my God, man. Unbelievable.
Peanut butter, right, though.
But I have, actually, my buddy and I came up with peanut butter, pickle, and sriracha on English muffin. I'm telling you, it's to die for. Go try it.
I'm not scared.
Yeah, it's awesome. So people are like, I don't think comedy.
That sounds like either white trash or single male food. Like, white trash that has nothing in the house, or a broke single dude that paid all his money in child support and alimony, and all he's got left is that shit in the fridge, and so he combines it and eats it. Either way, I'll try it and call it a delicacy. That's the word. I'm not scared of it. I'll combine foods.
So that's like your podcast in food form, and it's brilliant. Yeah. It's the small town thing, and this just kind of came to me as we were talking. There's less anonymity in small towns. You know, someone gets killed in Arizona or in Phoenix, pick up the body, they put them in the morgue, and nobody really thinks about it other than the family. These small towns, it's so ingrained. If someone dies, it's like a part of the fabric.
In Phoenix, when somebody is murdered here, they got a time crunch because they got to bag that body and then head 5 miles west where there's another one.
Right.
Whereas in these small towns, it's one, and then you talk about it for the next year until the next one happens, and then that person goes on trial. And it's they very rarely and seldom, they're few and far between. So when it does happen, it's a big story. So if it's a salacious one where there's rumor and dirty stuff behind the scenes that's involved, those are the ones that stick out, and it's easier to find the story there and easier to make the jokes because it's so just terrible that you don't expect that life to be happening in a town where everybody's involved in everybody's business. So somebody being able to hide their meth usage while they're the science teacher and they're cheating on their wife with another teacher and they're doing meth out in the middle of the woods. When you find that story, it's fascinating and hilarious because nobody in town is living their life that way. And then we get to do an entire podcast about it. It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
When James pieces that together, he's got to be thinking jackpot, you know?
Yeah, like, absolutely. Absolutely.
Like cha-ching, cha-ching.
It's fun. It's a bummer to say it's fun because we're laughing at somebody's misfortune, but we're laughing at an idiot that didn't have to do that. That's what we're laughing at. And we're laughing at somebody that completely just had a roadmap to a successful life, or at least a life that there was nothing to be ashamed of. And they changed that path entirely and now are complete shameful monsters.
So I get that it's probably asking, like, which of your kids you like better, but which show do you like working on better?
I like doing crime and sports most because that was our baby. That was what we started first, and that's the one that we really, really loved. And it does great. We can be more of ourselves. It's looser because that you're making fun of an asshole for an hour or 3 hours, whatever it is, that everybody can get behind. When somebody had life and the world by the balls, and then cut those balls off, threw them in a meat grinder, and then kicked life down the stairs. Why would you do that? You had everything, and you threw it all away. Why would you? That's why crime and sports is more fun, because it's so hard to make fun of a plumber that worked 40 hours a week for 15 years and then sawed his wife's head off. It's like, why would you even do that?
Right.
But they parallel because there's always that moment that they didn't have to do what they did. But they both, no matter famous and rich and the star in the spotlight, being announced at the beginning of the game with your name in lights, talking about which college you went to, or a guy that's just depressed and fills up a thermos of coffee every morning and still goes down the same road. It's human nature, and it's fascinating, and it's disgusting and sad. We started the podcast because James and I because we're friends, we talk on the phone. We used to talk on the phone for like an hour at a time, talking about comedy or a gig that we had coming up, or giving each other good news about comedy that we had made or some achievement. And we would talk about other things also, which were like other comics, and we would make fun of other comics. And they were hysterical phone calls that you could never record and put out because nobody would know what we're talking about outside of Phoenix Comics. So eventually we got to a point where we were like, we should be recording these phone calls. And then we never recorded the phone calls, but James called me and said, let's do a podcast and let's do it about criminal athletes. And I couldn't be more excited to do it. So we started that. And then once it started to be something that people were listening to, and we were getting what we felt were large numbers and a big audience every week, James was like, why don't we do this with like crimes in just small towns. I was like, that's great. And he said, Small Town Murder is the name of it. Let's do that. And we just started. And it just somehow that one just it picked up and it worked and people liked it. And the difference between us and other crime podcasts that cover like murder is that we're not just reading a wiki page or we're not just reading a couple of news articles. We give you the entire spread and layout of what a town is and what life is like to live in that town. And then we give you the murder. And then we give you what event ruined that whole way of life and made all those people lock their doors at night.
Yeah.
And that, I think that is the appeal of our show. Mixing in our personalities and what we do. And I love it. I love doing it just because it's something freeing and we get to talk about stuff that is horrible. But we're going to make it more digestible.
Well, and I've heard some people that I've recommended the show to, and even my wife say, well, why are there so many details at the beginning? Why is it 45 minutes of intro? And it's like, well, you got to get back to why that bridge mattered or why this
right.
town is poor as hell. And so these people living in the trailer court, you know, so
right.
on and so forth. It's like the buildup to, you know, and it's not TV where you have visuals as much. So
right.
it's like you have to lay the foundation and then build the house. And I feel like that gets lost on people.
Yeah, you're right. And you can't watch Tombstone is a 2-hour movie. It's one of the greatest movies in history. It's called Tombstone. It's not called Gunfight at the OK Corral. It's called Tombstone, and everything around that town of Tombstone matters to that one gunfight. If that movie was just called Gunfight at the OK Corral, it is legitimately 15 seconds long. You can't just do that and then have a shootout and it be over. You have to give the story, the plot,
mm-hmm.
why, who did what to who, where and when. And it's not always just one thing did that. It's a buildup of several characters, and it all matters to the end of the movie. And the end of the movie for that is Wyatt Earp rides off in the sunset with what's her fuss, and Doc dies without his boots on. You can't do all that you can't do the gunfight without all of that. And that's why we try to give you the whole makeup of the town, because it's the same. You can't just end with this happened, now he's in jail. Who wants to hear that? That if you want that, go watch Dateline, because they do that every week. They don't give you the whole story of how everything happened.
Keith Morrison and Lester Holt and all that stuff.
Right. Yeah. Fucking nutsack face, Pete Morrison.
Damn it, man, though. You got to give me that spoiler alert for the OK Corral. I mean, next you're going to tell me the Titanic sank. I mean, for crying out loud. What is this?
Tombstone is my favorite movie, and I don't know why I never had the correlation between our show and Tombstone, but we're very similar in the way of our story is laid out, that they give the whole reason that Tombstone even came to happen. And that's what we do. We give how Scott's Bluff ever came to happen. We give why Wyoming in that tiny town, why that ever happened. These tiny towns, it's fascinating that a tiny town of 6,000 people still exists. Why? There's big cities in every state. Why are you in a town of 6,000 people?
Well, not Wyoming.
Yeah, that's true. There's 6,000 people in the whole state.
Oh my goodness, it's unbelievable. Do you guys envision making this a career, or are you guys just happy to be? I don't want to say hobbyists, because I know you're making money and it's a thing, but you obviously have you're gainfully employed and all that stuff. What would your dream be, or your ultimate goal with this show? What would that be?
I'd love to have a business card that just says Jimmy Wissman Podcaster. That would be fantastic. That'd be amazing and a dream that I can't even fathom. I'd also love one that says Jimmy Wissman Comedian. I'd also love one that says Jimmy Wissman Electrician. I'm not scared of any of those.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is we all have limited time on this planet. And I'd love mine to be filled with trying to tell a story of horrible circumstances to large audiences every week. I'd love that, for sure. That it would be fantastic, because with comedy, you have to constantly be creating new jokes, and it's exhausting, and it makes you hate yourself because your jokes are always about you. And I don't want to do that anymore. I love doing it. It's fun. I love doing my act. I love writing new jokes. But I'd love more to do a stand-up show and then a podcast. Stand-up show and then a podcast. And that's what we're doing this weekend, or next weekend, rather, in Detroit with Dan Cummins, where we're doing stand-up at the beginning. We do stand-up for the early show, where James and I will do 20 minutes, and then Dan comes out and does an hour. And then
Dan Cummins!
After, you know, yeah.
One of my favorite things. I love when you do that.
He's so awesome. So then on the late show, then we're podcasting, and we're going to do a Small Town Murder Time Sucked edition, where Dan will be on the show with us, and I can't wait to do it. Those are those shows that I'm really looking forward to, is the one-offs like that. It's only going to happen when we run across each other and when we can schedule it. Outside of that, we're just going to do our show, and I love doing that too, because it's just me and James, and it's almost a vacation from my daily life, because it's so much less stress, and I just get to be me. I've been fired from every job I've ever had because just being me gets me in trouble. And so podcasting, I get to just be me, and people enjoy it.
I'm sorry I stole your Dan Cummins bit. That was uncalled for.
No, it's fine.
I love that. I tell my wife all these little things that I like, and she just rolls her eyes because she's just like, whatever, you know? So the first episode with Ray Carruth was like 40 minutes, I think, or 50 minutes. And it, like you said, it was in one of your living rooms, or James' living room. How has each show evolved? Because now you've got the Sahara Desert Fart Fact of the Week. You've got your real estate report. All these things that I feel like have been added as they've gone on. What's the evolution of each show kind of look like?
You know, it's with crime and sports, we were afraid that we weren't ever going to get an hour out of each show. And we were really scared to actually try to get an hour, because we didn't know what we could do, where what we could say, and what people would go with. And now looking back, I wish we had saved several of those shows for now, because now we're so much more comfortable doing this, and we could say so much more. We could go further on tangents. We could go further with descriptions of things and get darker or be dirtier. Or we were just scared to turn people off. And knowing that people will go with us so many more places makes us so much happier. The show's evolution has been so organic and so real. That's what really makes it special to me, is that you can't just inject things and think that they're going to work. You just have to do them gradually over time, and then they happen. And if people enjoy them, they keep happening. I think that's what it is. You gotta let things happen organically. And that's just from comedy. Also, we're very lucky that we did comedy before this, because podcasting and comedy are so similar, yet so different, in that you don't have the instant gratification. But the actual evolution of your act in comedy, it has to happen organically, and it has to happen how you are, or it doesn't happen, or it doesn't work, and then you bomb and you go home and feel miserable. And the same with podcasting. It bombs, nobody listens, nobody reviews, nobody cares, and then you go away and you feel sorry for yourself. So I think it's just letting it evolve gradually and organically. And I'm very proud that James and I have been very patient and not thinking this is going to be an overnight success. Granted, the success has been much quicker than most people, and much quicker than we expected was going to happen. But we realize that, and we're grateful for it, and we'll take it.
What has been your favorite episode of each one?
I liked Baraboo, Wisconsin, just because it was disgusting. It was the most dark. It was the boy breaking legs. And that one we had to actually stop recording for a minute so that I could go throw up. When it physically makes me ill, I know we're on to something, because other people are going to feel the same way. And that's what it's been so far, is that anytime I say something that's real, and that it's something that I feel at the moment, I get tons of tweets about how I said exactly what they were feeling. And so when something is happening that I feel, James already knows the story. He's investigated, and he gets the information a different way than somebody telling you the story. So when I'm told the story, I'm going to be affected and react entirely different than James reacted. So
that contrast kind of works, though.
Yeah, it does. And I really like it that way. We thought about both of us doing investigation and giving each other information, but that won't work as well as it works this way. And I feel bad for James because that means he has to be the one investigating. But he tells a story like nobody I know. And I love listening to him tell a story, but I also love the dichotomy of him knowing and then me not knowing and him breaking the story to me. It's so much more fun that way.
How did you find out that you were into murder? Because, like, for me, I grew up watching Unsolved Mysteries. It's on Amazon Prime right now, all the seasons. I watch it all the freaking time. Like, between that and old WCW Nitro episodes, like, those are the two things I watch in my free time, which is very minimal, I might say. But compared to you, I still probably have more free time. But so I'm into that.
I think I'm pretty sure Robert Stack broke the news to me that I'm a disgusting person, that I love horrible things. He really is the voice of my childhood, and that's depressing and sad.
But
he really
too.
he made it in Rescue 911. I used to love that show.
Yep.
It's those shows that really made me realize that this stuff is fascinating, and it made me think, like, what if I'm one of those people? What if I'm one of these horrible monsters because I love this? What if there's Jeffrey Dahmer inside me? And
he'd probably like that.
Yeah.
Sorry. I can't try to upstage
Jeffrey Dahmer would love me inside him.
You see what I mean? Like you're a comedian. I can't upstage you. We're not going to do this one upsmanship. But that was the alley-oop that you set me for that I could not help but slam home.
So I think that's what did it, is that I loved watching those things. And then I'd start now later in life. I Googled a lot of things. I'm probably on a list somewhere. I've watched the R. Bud Wire suicide. That is maybe the saddest thing I've ever seen, because really the saddest part is that he was vindicated after all of that. In postmortem, they found that he did no wrongdoing. And that's just a bummer that a man killed himself because he thought he was going to be ruined over something that was not accurate. And seeing that suicide, it made me realize that death is not near as shocking as people think it is, and not near as rare as people think it is. It happens every day, happens all day long. And if you're not careful, you're going to be driven insane by seeing something that's horrible, and it's going to ruin your life. So if you pepper it in slowly and you desensitize yourself to it, it's not going to be near as awful as you think it's going to be. And it's fascinating. And people's human behavior is really just disturbing. We think this life is beautiful, and we think this world is beautiful. It's not beautiful. It's the little things in life that are beautiful. It's the innocence of children. That's beautiful. And for somebody to steal that from them and ruin them, that's the evil. That's not beautiful at all. That's disgusting. And those people should be punished horribly. Mm-hmm. That's the stuff that it makes you appreciate your kids more. It makes you appreciate what you have more. And it makes you realize that this isn't, you don't take life for granted because it's going to go away.
Well, and it's like they say, life is, none of us get out alive. Don't take it too seriously.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think what you said about, like, knowing you were into these kind of things probably proves that you're not going to become the Jeffrey Dahmer. I think that it's like the awareness that you enjoy learning about that stuff. Meanwhile,
right.
Jeffrey Dahmer's out back dissecting a squirrel that he found. You know, it's just the, like, as much as you can worry about becoming that person, I think it's just the awareness that sets you apart. you know, is it weird though? You interact, you're kind of the guy that interacts with the fans. Does part of your brain think, oh, these like-minded people are also super into murder, and that's kind of weird, or not really?
You know, I've only met maybe two people that I was a little put off by. Outside of that, this audience, thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people, have been incredibly sweet. They're such nice people. In Chicago, we sold out two shows, which equates to 500 people. But 500 people that are like-minded, friendly, kind, and fun, and they it was, they couldn't have been better behaved. One person got kicked out of the entire thing, and it was only because she drank a ridiculous amount and kind of behaved a little wacky. But that's not her. That's just the booze. And maybe she just behaves weirdly when she drinks. I don't judge anybody unless they murder children or their wives or rape people. If they do things that are horrible to others, that's the only way I can judge somebody. If they're going to be a little wild when they drink, I'm not going to judge somebody. These people were so kind and so fun, and every person was looking for shirts. We brought very few. We weren't trying to sell things to people. All we wanted was to meet people and do a show for them. And they were trying to go above and beyond. People sending us gifts in the mail. You'd think that sounds a little weird if they're trying to get your address. But we sent them to the radio station. We're not going to give our home address.
give me that PO box.
Right. They're amazing people. And I haven't met anybody that's awful. I haven't met anybody that scares me. I haven't met anybody that seems off, but apart from one. It's been fantastic. I couldn't be more open about my life and willing to accept messages, phone calls. I'm not afraid of anything, and it's because these people are very comforting, and they aren't afraid to talk and reach out and tell me what they find funny or what they find interesting. And yeah, some of it's a little scary, but some of it, I'm just like, I don't know if you should be enjoying that, but it's just, they aren't hurting people. So who cares?
I want to ask you though, the compare and contrast of a live show versus a recording in the studio. I mean, what's the energy like in a live show, and how does that affect you as you're podcasting?
Well, because James and I are both comics, we thrive off of that interaction.
So it's definitely way different.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, I mean, right when you walk out on stage and people are shouting and wooing and clapping, that alone feels amazing, and that charges the rest of the show. James and I will blast through a show just because people are happy to see us. But when we get to the studio, it's very similar. I'm the crowd for James, and he's the crowd for me. So right when we walk up to the studio, we're both happy to be there. It's culminating it's taking all the energy that he's put into this week, and it's culminating into this podcast event that we're doing tonight, whether it's for nobody or if it's for a crowd full of people. It's still there because I'm his crowd and he's mine. But when we do the live shows, the people are, it's so loud and it's so fun. And the laugh right now from a joke that's coming out of my mouth right now versus waiting a few days to get a tweet about the joke. It's fantastic. It's so much fun.
So when you think about the small towns that you guys have profiled, which one would you most like to live in?
I really like the one that was in Maine, I think. It was the beach community up there. And then there was a beach community. I mean, the one in Hawaii sounds fantastic, too.
That sounds like paradise.
Yeah. But Portland didn't. The one in Oregon didn't sound bad either. It was outside of Portland, I think. I think that was the one where the kid was thrown off the bridge.
The one at the work. What do they call that again?
Job Corps.
Job Corps. Yes, I kept thinking of like work study, and I know this kid's not studying. This kid's not.
To me, it's
college.
The beach communities or the Pacific Northwest. That's that's just because I have a fascination with water. I love the ocean.
So you live in a place where there's none?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I live in a desert, and that's probably why I'm fascinated with water.
Contrast.
Because I hope that we have some one day. But I love I love the Pacific Northwest. I'd love to live in San Francisco, Sacramento, and not necessarily Sacramento, San Francisco, Portland, Seattle. I love that area of the country. But I also love right next to the beach, whether it be on the East Coast. I like Charleston, South Carolina. That area of the country is beautiful too. And it's anything that's a beach community. If it's in a dusty, just tiny shit town in Nebraska, Kansas, Iowa, I have zero interest of living there. But it's the little towns that are close to a beach. That sounds amazing because it sounds cheaper. And that, mm-hmm. to me, sounds amazing because I'm broke. But Hawaii sounds amazing just for the vacation.
So who would you most want to drink with from the Crime and Sports crew?
Oh, goodness. Vernon Maxwell's probably a blast to party with. but just because he had people, I believe it was him that had it, like a bodyguard bring women to his table and he would nod yes or no. And then the woman would sit down. Like, that sounds hysterical to me. I'd love to watch that, not partake and sure. not to judge women, but just to laugh at how petty and stupid
he
is.
Different world, man. I mean, yeah, athletes
for sure.
are on a different planet than we are, and they still do dumb crap. So, yeah. So you're parsing out drinking and partying. I guess those are one and the same.
Yeah.
So Vernon Maxwell would be on your list.
Just to sit and have a drink, maybe Alvin Robertson. But then again, I think he was I can't remember what his crime was. I think it was pretty awful also. Had something to do with children.
Chances are.
Probably, yeah. I don't think that I want to drink with any of those people, to be honest with you. We will cover Lawrence Taylor one day.
Oh, man.
And I'd love to sit and sip whiskey with him. I guarantee he's got stories that were not in newspapers that can't be told. And if he were to trust me to tell me those stories, I would love it. And I would never, I would zip my lips and never whisper a word of it. But I'd love to hear what he has to say, because I find him so fascinating, especially as somebody that changed an entire league, an entire object of a game, because of the way he played it. It's incredible. I love guys like that.
Yeah, transcendent. So we're coming down the home stretch here. If I'm not mistaken, you're into tattoos too, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I've got two right now. I've got the Bible verse from my grandpa's funeral on my forearm, and then on my bicep, the signature from my stepdad who was killed in a car accident, from his wedding certificate to my mom. So meaningful tattoos, you know, you want them to be meaningful, not like CM Punk with a Pepsi sign on his arm just because somebody freaking dared him to. But with yours, I mean, what's the aesthetic? What do you like? See, the next one I'm going to do, and I'm kind of breaking the news here, but nobody gives a crap anyway. I'm going to do the word home with like the M as the Gophers M and the E from the Minnesota Wave. And then the state of Minnesota will be the O. That's going to go down my right forearm once I lose 50 pounds. My wife said she didn't tell me I had to lose weight. It was just a deal we made. You know, I got to lose some weight. But I'm that doughy white guy. I laugh when you say that kind of stuff. But,
I love it.
what's the aesthetic, or what are yours all about? What do you got?
I've got nothing that's as thoughtful as that. That's an incredible tattoo. I really like that. I've just got things that remind me I'm not here forever. Like, my right arm it's almost a sleeve. It's almost done. I have like a dagger with the handle is two hands shaking hands. And then there's a snake wrapped around it, which, bit the hand of the recipient of the handshake, which is like, just reminding me that, that there are people out there that will, whether you shake their hand and look them in the eye or not, they'll still stab you in the back. There's still snakes everywhere. And as honest as you are, it doesn't matter. You have to know who you're in business with, or you'll end up broke, and they will not. And then I have a pistol down my forearm on the back that has, it says "Mama Tried," which is basically it's kind of an homage to my favorite Merle Haggard song, but it's also
nice. It's
also just reminding me that my mother tried, and despite her efforts, I'm still a piece of shit. and then I'm finishing it in a couple weeks with a cow skull that will have flowers and stuff. It's just a very southwestern sleeve that will it's kind of signifies where I come from and my roots and my background, so that it reminds me, no matter what I'm doing, if I'm doing it with my hands, I can always see that arm reminding me, don't do shady business deals, and remember that you're still white trash. And I won't ever forget that.
So come to Minneapolis, guys. You got to come to Minneapolis and do a show.
Oh, that's a promise.
Yeah. I'm probably going to be up in the front row heckling you guys. I'll try not to be that weird hanger on, but maybe
more than welcome. We'll go play pool after.
There you go.
That's what the live shows are about too. It's that we aren't those guys that do the show, walk off stage, and then everybody files out. We'll meet every single person. We're willing to go drink with every single person if they want to hang out. If they've got things to do after, go do your thing. And the people that hang around after, I'm we're there. We're not going anywhere. We can't get on a plane and get out of there right now. We got a plane in the morning. So we're going to be out all night with you guys. If people want to hang out, they're more than welcome to. In Chicago, I went to the bar next door and brought 30 people with me, maybe 20. Either way, they came over and we played pool and drank until bar closed.
Awesome.
We're not afraid to be around people. We aren't superstars. We're nobody. We're two dicks that make two podcasts that people tend to enjoy. So if they want to hang out with us after, I'll for it. Please do it.
All right, give 5-star reviews to Crime and Sports, Small Town Murder, Midwest Swing. Donate crimeandsports@gmail.com. Find them on Patreon if you want to be a regular donor. Just support these guys, support their efforts. Follow at Wisman Sucks. Follow, was it Jimmy P is Funny?
That's the one.
Yep, James Petrigallo, or James, is it James P?
James Petrigallo, but he goes, but on Twitter, it's at Jimmy P is Funny.
Yeah.
He doesn't have an Instagram. He barely uses Facebook. He tries his best to interact, but the man is so busy. I'm impressed with any like he has on Twitter. If I get an alert that James liked something, I'm blown away that he found the time.
So he's got the moat. He's got it filled with dragons. He's kind of got that going on.
The drawbridge is pulled, and he put sharks in fresh water. I don't know how he did it, but the man did it, and nobody's getting across that moat.
Well, good. One last thing. Dick Moss.
Yes.
I'm
God
sorry,
damn
man.
It, is that funny?
That's amazing. you, sir, may log off.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much for the time, Jimmy Wisman at Wisman Sucks. Dude, really appreciate you taking the time to be on the program, and I can't thank you enough. Wonderful work, and hopefully we'll see you in Minneapolis real soon.
Looking forward to it. Thanks so much for having me, Brandon. Hope you have a great day.
You've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network.